could do buttons and minstrels, because buttons are very good, so they rest on the tongue and they melt.
I think, yeah, I think that's... But maybe it's because I like a bit more of a crunch. I'm a biscuit man, really, at heart, James. Hello and happy new year.
Happy new year, everyone.
Happy 2024. James, how was your Christmas?
Well, George, I'd be lying if I said anything about it, because it is the 22nd of December currently we're recording this.
Yeah, full disclosure, we are pre-recording this because of the, you know, James and I do like to give each other a time off over the break. It's important.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. So all podcasts will be doing this. We're not alone.
Yeah.
But don't worry, we've got a very, very 2024 focus themed episode ahead of for us. Mm-hmm. First of all, James, how are you?
Oh, I'm a bit sick.
I got a bit sick.
Christmas lurgy, and I'm so sorry. I came in hot for you saying I thought it was your fault because last week you were a bit sick, but it's just the parties, it's the going out, it's the cold weather, the everything.
It's so not
if
my
I
fault.
Sound very nasal today, I'm very sorry. If I do blow my nose or cough, I promise I will edit it out.
Please note that I had a different type of ailment last week.
I'm launching a full-scale inquiry.
Which was not to do with me.
Dominic Cummings
will be
leaking all the WhatsApps.
Forgive me, I had a chest infection.
You described, George,
your symptoms at the time.
Fucking lunatic.
Can you explain why 5,000...
Failure to grasp basic concepts like charts.
So
our number.
I'm sorry that you got Christmas lurgy, but this is it. This is very much... as soon as we finish recording today, we're basically both off. I'm going home.
Yeah.
I'm home, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the other side of the M25.
Yeah.
God help me.
Beyond.
Yeah. And you're off to the... What a great idea you've
Can't
had
wait, yeah.
to go to a warmer, sunnier climate. Yeah. To the Southern Hemisphere.
Southern Hemisphere sun. Oh. It has to be done. Can't wait.
And last week, you might remember, last year, we should say, the Pop Kitchen Awards.
Second annual.
We did our review of the year. And if you haven't checked
night.
That out, what a night it was. And you know, if you haven't seen the pictures in the Daily Mail of you and me staggering out of a limo at 4 o'clock in the morning.
The bow tie's undone.
Yes.
A bottle of champagne in one hand.
Do you think...
Cigarette in the other.
You'll ever get to the point where you can tie your own bow tie? Or are you going to be one of those people
that... I can tie my own bow tie.
Close?
I probably... If you asked me to do it right now, I'd fail. But there was a period of time when I could do it. I'd probably have to check.
Whether it's a normal Windsor knot, you just know off by heart.
Windsor? Oh, like a tie.
Yeah, the Windsor knot.
Yeah.
Like, well, there's...
Went to school every day.
Yeah, but school tying there's a cheat way to tie a school tie, isn't it? Easily peanutted,
yes,
as they would say. You pull it down and knot it.
Yeah.
But no, I mean like a thing. So we're going to go through some of the most anticipated movies we're looking forward to in this new year of our Lord 2024.
Yes. And also with all of these, people who've listened to these episodes before, any release dates, windows we throw out, massive pinch of salt.
Yeah, hugely flexible.
Just famously shift like the tectonic plates of our planet. And the number of times you and me have been like, well, that's clearly not coming out.
Exactly.
And so it's usually a good indicator.
Some release dates are US specific. Others are not. Also, we have a bonus episode.
Yes.
A bizarrely, coincidentally, Netflix-themed one in which we shall be reviewing our thoughts on... Not reviewing our thoughts. We'll be giving our thoughts and reviewing Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget.
Yep.
James has finally seen Maestro. Uh-huh. Caught up with that big Oscar contender for this year. And also, we finished The Crown at last. Season 6 completed and the whole, therefore, seasons of The Crown completed. We will be talking about that in spoiler detail in our bonus episode this week.
Completed.
I'm sure many of you over the Christmas period have gone and seen those things. Mm. So check out for that bonus episode later this week. But until then, James, shall we get on with some of the most anticipated movies of 2024?
Please.
So James, I've got a list of 10 movies that I've plucked out of various different lists online. There are already articles circulating from, you know, big media brands about things. And I've shopped around a few. There's one from Time that I've got a few inspirations from. And we're going to start with a film that feels a little bit cheating to say it is the most anticipated film of 2024, because it also was one of the most anticipated films of 2023 until it was moved because of the strikes. That is, of course, Dune Part 2. Cue sand. It's coarse, it's dirty, it gets everywhere.
Whispering under a veil.
Yeah. Blue, deeply blue eyes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And drinking your own sweat and pee.
The rumble of a sandworm.
Yes, exactly. Doing the Fremen dance across the sand.
That always looks silly.
I know. To not detect the sandworms, it's like dum, 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 dum dum. Just put Candy by Cameo over
Dune
it.
Dune is a film that I think right now for me is the poster child for sleek, chic, modern sci-fi.
Yes.
In that it looks very slick. It feels very smart. It's beautifully shot with the best, most attractive actors you can work with.
They're all very handsome.
Yeah, like you could easily just, while they're filming, go, guys, can I just shoot the new perfume ad? Mm. It's called Spice for him and her.
Yeah.
And then it's like Timothée Chalamet. Yeah,
Spice by Arrakis.
Spice by Arrakis. Yeah, Arrakis, Spice. And like, you know, their blue eyes and the thing, and they're just tripping balls, and it's like in a little vial. It's ready to be a perfume ad.
Yes.
I look at that and I go, that's very slick and it's very well presented, and that's kind of what I think cool, slick sci-fi looks like, that doesn't feel cheap. And I sometimes look over at the other offering, and I haven't seen this film yet, but I look at Rebel Moon, which is coming out, I think, day before Christmas Eve.
By the time of this release, it would have been out.
And I just look at it and I go, it just doesn't look, despite it being original, new IP, I know originally based on a Star Wars script, for some reason, doesn't look as slick and as cool and as modern as Dune does.
I think Dune has a much more kind of original vision.
Yeah.
And an original idea and an original aesthetic. It's coming out in March, and I'm looking forward to it. I saw the trailer once, so I needed to see it because you and I both saw it and went, right, just too many plot details in there for us. Thank you very much.
The film.
But I think this will make how I feel about the first one. So
yeah, I agree.
If I watch this and it really succeeds, I will feel much better about part one. I will rewatch part one ahead of this as well, absolutely. But that's why I'm excited. It's like this, it does look really good. It looks like the kind of action's kicking into gear.
Yeah.
But for me, it will, I kind of get two films out of that. I get the joy of the first one and the second one. So that is June. That is coming out March.
I totally agree with you from part two. I will see my feelings. Will sort of finish off my feelings from part one, where we both felt like, yes, cool. Yeah. Need to see the end. I want from part two a little bit more to chew on as an audience member, a little bit more of a concept to digest. Mm. I loved part one. It was visually fantastic. But I don't think there was so much intellectually for me to be like, yes, of course.
Yes,
this.
I know
a different film, but versus Blade Runner 2049. Mm. So rich and intellectual and conceptually rich. And I thought that film was just brilliant and smart. I'm not saying Dune is dumb, but I was like, I want something to think about.
Also, I am assuming that part two is not the final chapter. I'm assuming they're going to try and do a third.
So he said there is a script for Dune part three, and Denis Villeneuve would love to do it, but he wants to do something else first.
I understand that.
Which is very funny.
I wonder whether the studio will let him do that, or they will go for somebody else. I imagine they'll let him do it because you kind of need an overarching architect.
Assuming it's critically and commercially successful, I'm sure they would go.
But then that means,
kind of like how Nolan did Dark Knight, then he did Inception, then Dark Knight Rises.
That's true. He actually did Batman Begins and then The Prestige.
Oh, that's true, actually. So, he did do one-on-one off.
And Coppola did Godfather Conversation Part 2. So it does happen. Yeah. And maybe it's actually quite good creatively.
Mm.
So
that would be like 10 years he would have worked on Dune. One thing.
Otherwise, also, what you do get by the third installment is you're kind of out of fresh creativity, you're out of fresh ideas, and you're kind of rehashing the two projects you've just worked on. Yeah. Interesting conversation. The next
film...
Maybe
we should take a break from this podcast, make a new one, and then come back rejuvenated.
The next film that caught my attention that's coming out in March is a film called Mickey 17 with Robert Pattinson. And this is interesting because it is Bong Joon-ho's new film. Bong Joon-ho, of course, made many films, but most recently, of course, the fantastic Parasite, which won the Oscar for Best Picture. It stars Robert Pattinson in a science fiction thriller in which he is the titular Mickey 17, an expendable space traveler sent on a deadly mission to colonize a planet. When he dies, his body is cloned with most of his memories intact, setting off a cycle that parallels immortality. A little bit of Duncan Jones's Moon in there as well.
Such a Robert Pattinson film in a good way. He loves an original concept.
Yeah.
A bit of sci-fi, like Cosmopolis.
Yes, yes. High Life. Did you ever see that? The one in space? High Life?
No. Oh, that looks good, though.
It was okay. With Andre 3000 in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say this looks obviously much smaller. This is like after the success of Parasite, Bong Joon-ho makes a smaller side project. But I'm interested to see.
Robert Pattinson chooses his films really well.
I'm always interested. That's a smart agent. Smart man there. Yeah. The next film I also wanted to check out because it's got loads of good talent in it and it visually looks beautiful to look at is Luca Guadagnino's new film, Challengers. Luca Guadagnino, of course, who directed Call Me By Your Name, Suspiria, Bones and All. And this stars Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, who we like very much from The Crown, and Mike Feist, who I mentioned when we talked about most hot actors right now. And Mike Feist was in Spielberg's West Side Story. He was fantastic in it. And I saw him on stage in London last year in Brokeback Mountain. He was fantastic. And you have this kind of what looks like a very 1980s set, waspish love triangle in this sort of the tennis world, full of sex, a little bit of blood. It's a sexy thriller. And I'm all for it, frankly.
There are nowhere near enough tennis movies. Tennis is so dramatic and exciting. Underserved, very well.
Thank you.
And I love Jon Favreau's Wimbledon, starring Paul Bettany and Kirsten Dunst.
That's a Jon Favreau film?
Yes, it's a Jon Favreau film.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure it's a Jon Favreau film.
You hear him directing it.
Don't quote me.
Wimbledon film.
Okay.
Jon Favreau. Oh, no, it's not. Richard Loughran. Why does I think... Did he produce it? Take it back. It's a Richard Loughran film.
You don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Don't know what I'm talking about.
So that is Challengers, and that was pushed back by the strikes, and that is coming out in April. But yeah, a great trio of talent there, solid director, and an interesting original premise. I look forward to seeing it.
And King Richard was a good tennis film. It was a solid tennis film.
Well, I didn't
film.
See that one.
Yeah.
I didn't see Take My King Out of My Richard's Mouth. Yes. That sounded terrible. Yeah. I tried to do a Will Smith joke, but that sounded really strange. But I should go see that.
Yeah.
The next movie is from another director we are interested in, particularly you, I think, which is Alex Garland. Alex Garland, who directed Ex Machina, Annihilation, and Men. And his new film is called Civil War. That's also out in April from A24, which is a dystopian thriller. It imagines a deeply divided America in the not-so-distant future, ravaged by a violent second civil war, starring Kirsten Dunst, Kaylee Spaney, and Jesse Plemons, who is their husband and wife, aren't they? Jesse and Kirsten.
Yes, yeah.
The film probes just how far people will go to defend their beliefs. Now, Ex Machina, only seen once, but I liked it. Annihilation, only seen once, flawed, but I liked it.
Yeah, interesting.
Bold ending.
Striking.
In the lighthouse.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. And then Men, bold and striking, but also flawed by the ending.
Yes,
but
very flawed.
If you want a director who is giving interesting ideas in a sort of mixed bag of soup, I think Alex Garland is a way to go. So I'd be interested in that.
Alex Garland's very good at making original ideas that are very contained. Ex Machina contained in that house, like a sort of hot box, sweaty, intense thriller. Annihilation, a little bit less so, but emerging into this Tarkovsky stalker-esque world. And then you got... Men, which, yes, contained in this like dystopian, horrible village or in the house even. So that Civil War feels like a sort of expanding into a slightly larger fray. Not saying you can't do it, but interesting, larger subject to tackle for him.
No relation to Captain America either. I'm wondering if they should have called it like the second Civil War or something. Or
Civil War 2.
Civil War, but then it makes it like a sequel. Yeah, well, I haven't seen Civil War 1, so I can't watch this.
It's looking at some of the ideas, I'm like, is it a bit on the nose and easy to tackle a sort of... Is it too soon to go, oh, the civil war between right and left and one is winning and the ideas are being squashed?
Or basically being like, you know how we're polarized now? Yeah. Just crank up the temperature in a few years' time.
We've had an insurrection attempt. And then,
well, you say we, I mean...
The Americans. Yeah. Democracy.
Yes, you're right. Yes.
And like, you know, this week... Trump's maybe or maybe not going to be allowed to, under the Constitution.
By the time of recording, that'll be a few months ago.
It's all very much...
It's all in the balance.
It's about to kick off. It's that song by Bo Burnham, That Funny Feeling, which is that funny feeling that everything's literally just about to end.
And on that note, let's move on to Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson, who, of course, made Nowhere Boy and I think 50 Shades of Grey, actually, the first film. This has been kind of got a lot of mixed feelings about this, and I kind of do as well. So the reason is that I believe that Amy Winehouse's father is involved in the production of this film. And anyone who saw Asif Kapadia's Amy documentary about her knows that her relationship with her father and her father's involvement in her life was very problematic, very troubling, and kind of poses questions about how complicit her father was in perpetuating her... situation, sadly. So when you kind of get a kind of glossy studio father sanctioned production about her life, people have kind of become a little bit uncomfortable. I've seen already lots of accounts absolutely trashing it, like pre-hating on it. I want to keep a slight open mind because I believe Sam Taylor Johnson can make an interesting film. It stars a newcomer, Marissa Abella, from Industry, a show I've never watched. I've heard people talk about, but I also have heard it's trash as
I had so many people recommend me that show. Like, oh, Industry, it's so good. You know, Untold Story. I thought it was fucking dog shit.
Yeah, really.
It was just, it was so much, like a lot of TV around that time, so sexual because it could, and therefore it's interesting. I'm like, this sex does not need to be in here. Yeah. Dialogue was terrible.
Yes, I've seen clips pushed to me on TikTok. I'm like, that's a scene?
Yeah, I think I watched three episodes and I gave it three episodes because so many people had said it was great. And then me and Talia were just like, I'm sorry, this is not a good show. Sorry, I didn't finish it. Maybe it got better.
So that's out in May. And from the stills that have been released, absolutely, Marissa looks just like Amy Winehouse.
Mm. I'm actually surprised it's taken this long to do an Amy Winehouse.
I think
she's so beloved. And
I think probably the Asif Kapadi documentary kind of set things off on an even keel. But go see Asif Kapadi as Amy. It's a good documentary.
Separately, was it you that told me that the Michael Jackson family had commissioned a biopic about Michael Jackson?
Starring like his nephew.
Yeah. Which is slightly strange considering
Michael
Jackson's sentiment is a bit split,
to say the least. Yeah. I don't know. That's not on this list, and I don't think it's coming out. So then there hasn't actually been any more news about that. So
yeah. Pinch of salt.
Pinch of salt. Moving on to a film that has definitely got our attention with a massively exciting trailer, which is Furiosa.
Furiosa!
A Mad Max saga. 9 years, it'll be, since Fury Road came out.
Yeah.
We have a prequel that follows Charlize Theron's character as a young woman played by Anya Taylor-Joy. But a bit like how Mad Max Fury Road was a sort of sequel prequel, doesn't really matter in relation to Mad Max. This is basically a Mad Max movie without Mad Max. It doesn't really matter when it's set. Cue dunes, sand buggies, steampunks,
oil slick.
Chris Hemsworth in a lot of prosthetic.
He's got a real schnoz
doing in it. And what I like about Mad Max, I'm always like, oh yeah, it's Australia.
It's
like a dystopic Australia. I'm so glad to get out of the States for this kind of movie. It does look very much like the first one. I hope it's not a rehash of everything that worked with Fury Road. I hope it really builds and it gives us something more. Because Mrs. Miller hasn't made anything, I don't think. Oh no, he made 3,000 Years of Longing. That was it.
Yes.
Which I actually really liked because it was so have you seen it?
But I remember you talking about it on the show.
Completely wild. And now he's gone back to doing this. I think I'm interested. The thing is about Mad Max Fury Road is that I only saw that once. I saw it at the cinema.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. But I've been always a bit surprised at how the love and adulation that film has received in the past 10 years. Like, people hold it as like a genuine masterpiece.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with it, but I'm like, oh, I have to go and rewatch that now.
Yeah, I think I've seen it thrice.
Oh, wow.
In cinema, at home.
I think we've had this conversation before.
I think I agree. It's masterpiece is a strong word to use for it. It's an immediate masterpiece of visual storytelling.
Yes.
I don't really think we got many films like that of the studio blockbuster that managed to achieve storytelling in that way. And it felt so fresh and so new, really tactile filmmaking, very kinetic. Yeah. And that was such a refreshing change from something, which I looked at that film before I saw it and I thought that will come and go and no one will ever think about that random Tom Hardy movie. Mm. But no, it was really surprisingly very good. Really great action. Yeah, surprised it took this long to do it. A lot of interesting stories from the relationship between Tom Hardy and
Charlize Theron.
Mm. They did not get on together when they were working.
Yes, he's a bit of an interesting character, isn't he?
Yeah.
I would just say at this point, James, you offered to get me some water before you recorded and it has not materialized.
Should we take a break? Should we take a Pulp Kitchen B-roll break and we'll have water?
You can get me some water and we can talk about the other films we can do. Also, you did say you were going to change your jumper, which has a hole in it, but you've stuck to it now. It's fine.
Is there anything else?
You're real. No, I'm just kidding.
Just the top is there.
No, it's fine. Did you want a break?
Yeah, I can take a podcast break.
I mean, I can keep going. I don't mind.
The music will be fading in now.
I have water.
And then there'll be
water in my
B-roll and a tea.
It's just... Thank you, James, for just giving me some water.
Show the people the water.
And he's put ice in it. Isn't that classy? Yeah. It's really nice. You do look after me here.
Yeah, in the summer you get straw because it adds to the cooling effect.
Oh, I love it. Like we talked about it before, like the hamster in the...
Yeah, yeah. And it's sort of a straw when you suck it. It washes in.
Mm, goes straight to the back. Okay, anyway. Next up. Look, well... excuse me. So, Deadpool 3 in July. Now, I don't know where to even begin with this, because first of all, Deadpool, the last Deadpool came out like 5 years ago. It'll be 6 years by the time this film comes out. Mm-hmm. In which time, we're very much aware of that Ryan Reynolds can do the Deadpool shtick. Deadpool is not new and funny anymore. It's kind of like the first Deadpool came out in 2016 and it was kind of like, ooh, risky. And the second one came out 2018. We're like, oh, okay, funny. And now it's going to be 7 years.
Deadpool 1 really felt like Ryan Reynolds had reached his final form.
Yes.
Like he'd long been, that's him at the peak of his powers. Yes. His comedy had always kind of been leaning towards it and it felt like his pivotal role.
Yes.
And from that, we've seen a lot of Ryan Reynolds films where he does
variations
Deadpool
on that.
Sort of in varying levels up to 11.
Yes.
And that's kind of his thing. And look, I can't really say, oh, he does the same thing in every film because a lot of like really top actors who are very successful do the same thing in every film. But I liked Deadpool 2. I don't remember it well and I'm not like... I was very much satiated and I'm very happy to see what Deadpool 3 whenever it's ready, which turns out is this year.
I think that...
You got Wolverine coming
back. Yes, Hugh Jackman's back as Wolverine in a sort of... in the costume that is like the classic, the yellow one.
Which after Logan on the Graham Norton show, him and Patrick Stewart announced that they wanted to rest the characters and let it rest on that very lovely note that Logan left it on. And I was like, nice, now move on. But obviously he needs to come back in Avengers 7.
I know. And also, where does this fit with Marvel at the moment, James?
Well, it's coming in.
This is the one Marvel film we get next year.
Yeah. So X-Men are being teased currently in post-credit scenes across the MCU.
Which
you knew that.
No, I didn't know that. Is that a spoiler? Well, I guess it is now. Which post-credit scenes?
So in post-credit for Captain Marvel.
What?
Yeah, Beast is that. Kelsey Grammer's Beast.
Oh, from the Foxverse.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad. Good for you, Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for you.
All done up in the blue. Yeah.
You know, Kelsey Grammer, as the Frasier reboot says, doesn't have a lot of time. So, you know, sorry, has a lot of time on his hands at the moment. Doesn't have a lot going on in his plate.
What do you know?
God, that's an incredibly tight, didn't it? And if they were like, you need to sit in makeup for 4 hours every day just to film this, like, maybe I'll be there putting the makeup on. Mm. That's a Frasier reference for you. Cool. So, okay, so they're teasing the X-Men.
And Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, is like acknowledging that the X-Men are around in because different universes.
Professor X.
But Pedro Pascal has been cast.
He hasn't been cast. He's been teased. He's not cast.
I think he's cast. He got cast.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you know this and I don't? Pedro Pascal, Reed Richards. I don't think it was...
Which I thought was a bit
While
boring.
A deal is far from done, sources tell Deadline that three-time Emmy nominee Pedro Pascal is in talks to play it. So it's not signed on the dotted line.
I think it's a bit boring. I'd rather they made a new star, if you ask me.
Yeah, but he's so hot right now.
He is so hot right now, but he's a bit... he's such a known...
But he's such a daddy, and he'd be playing the OG daddy, wouldn't he?
Such a daddy.
Like, I think it's actually quite a smart choice.
It's hot.
Like, they did the Krasinski thing, and then they needed to move on.
It's like a fan thing.
It's all
coming around.
And also, Marvel is currently trying to obviously massively recalibrate because their whole Kang linchpin has become undone.
Do you want to talk about that now? Because I think 2024 currently only has...
Deadpool,
and there's one other thing. It's the first year in ages.
They basically
where we don't have like four Marvel.
Marvel
films.
Cottoned on about 5 years later than everyone else that they were putting out too much content, and we're like, oh yeah, we need
it's just Deadpool back. 3. So we've got Madam Web, which doesn't count, and Kraven the Hunter, which doesn't count.
They're Sonyverse.
They're Sonyverse, but you know,
we're not talking about that on this show.
The bottom of the barrel.
Jeez, please. Oh no, Kraven the Hunter. Oh no. Anyway,
Who do we got? Spin the wheel.
And Madam Web. Yes, we'll go for that.
A Spider-Man villain from like 90s cartoons.
Please. Let's move on.
That is quite telling though, just to acknowledge that Marvel is putting a pause on their films for them. To only release one film is like, whoa, taking a break. And then the news will be sort of 3-4 weeks old by the time you're listening to this. But this week, Jonathan Majors was
fired
from the MCU after the court ruled that most of the allegations of abuse had come through. Which, and the evidence never really looked good for him. And I think Marvel probably known for a very long time this is going to happen. I'm sure they have a file A with all of the rest of the scripts for the next 10 films, and then a folder B with all of the rest of the scripts for the next 10 films. And Kevin Feige will like initiate folder B.
Yeah.
And now all the other films have been rewritten. Do you think it'll be recast, or do you think they'll just get rid of him?
I think they'll get rid of him.
Just change it completely, despite everything they've done to say.
Unless they could do a recast, but the problem is...
The title of the Avengers film will change.
But also, the thing is, Kang, like, it is his face throughout eternity. You can't be like, and now he has a different face. Like, are you just not going to address that? You can do it with Mark Ruffalo becoming the Hulk after Edward Norton, and Don Cheadle becoming War Machine, but for something you've built up this much?
It's hard.
I don't know. And it also, you know, I saw this talk online being like, oh, John Boyega could step into the role. It doesn't it feel a little bit tactless to be like, right, insert other black actor so we can get to just fill this role for us. I think
a lookalike.
You know what? Maybe do a rethink. Because also, how are we actually feeling about Kang? Not that excited. I think maybe do something
on
else.
On and off.
Anyway, let's move on to another superhero film, but in a different way, which is Joker 2, Joker Folie à Deux, which comes out in October.
You said that with such a heavy accent. Folie à Deux.
It's written Folie à Deux. It's got an accent over the A, and it's, I mean, I'm not going to go Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux.
It's Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux.
In this film...
Folie à Deux is the French term for dual personality...
Thank
sociopathic.
You.
Well, they, is it Folie à Deux?
If you have split personality. I don't know. Something. A due folly.
Something a bleh.
Joaquin Phoenix returns to his Oscar-winning role as Arthur Fleck, and Lady Gaga stars as Dr. Harlene Quinzel, a psychologist at Arkham Asylum, who, as we know, treats the Joker, but however, it leads to her own descent into madness and the adoption of a new persona, Harley Quinn.
Folie à Deux, delusional mental illness shared by two people in close association.
Right.
So Joker and
Harley. So like a partnership. I've heard it's like going to be very like musical led, isn't it? It's very, you know, I'm sort of very, very lukewarm on the original Joker. I know you hold it in high regard.
Yeah.
I don't think that film needed a sequel, but we're getting it. I guess it was inevitable. No. However, if they are really leaning in and making it more wild with Lady Gaga, making it, you know, a musical or whatever, I'm okay with that. Push it. Push the envelope a little bit. Let's continue what the essential, most interesting ingredient about the first Joker was, which is it's a superhero film, but not as you know it. So keep doing that. Lean into that more.
The sequel really takes the impact out of that film standing alone and having the impact that it did, and being quite a surprise, and
in a oversaturated superhero film full of sequels and spin-offs, and so we're now getting a sequel to it. So
But I'm interested to see what they did, what they can do years on, given what Joker had to say, regardless of whether I thought it was intended to or not. The film still had the effect.
Yes,
I'm curious. I'll be very excited to see what they do with it.
And then we have another sequel, because there's a pattern emerging here. Gladiator 2 in November. Ridley Scott returning, Ridley Scott directing.
Which we just said can't be the title. Sounds
it can't be. It can't be. You can't just call it Gladiator 2. You have to call it like Gladiator, like the Rise of the Sandals or something or something else.
Yeah.
Because Gladiator 2 just sounds like something on a spreadsheet that a studio exec signed off on. Ridley Scott's back, he's returning it. He's just done the epic Napoleon, and now he's doing the epic this. As we know, Paul Mescal stars as the now grown Lucius Verus, which is Commodus's, aka Joaquin Phoenix's nephew, who was saved by Russell Crowe in the original Gladiator. I don't remember, but sure. As he seeks answers about his biological father. Well, his face is probably still on a couple of coins, like lying around.
Yeah, he sculpts it into the side of the Colosseum.
But that also stars Pedro Pascal and Barry Keoghan and a lot of interesting talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gladiator, we forget how huge Gladiator was in 2000. I know we were very young at the time.
Everyone had that DVD.
It was hard rotation. It was, it won the Best Picture Oscar.
Yeah.
It was, the song was playing everything, and that song has been memed and played out and, you know, done loads of times.
Typical like woman's voice. Over,
walking through a field of wheat.
Through the field. That amazing clip of it's Russell Crowe walking through the field and this guy's lying in the field and a hand just comes over.
Yeah.
It's very good.
And I guess it was kind of inevitable. The fact it's taken 24 years to seem like a long period of time. But yeah, you know what? I don't think we've had a good sword and sandals epic since Gladiator. Don't tell me 300 was as good as that. We all know it wasn't. I watched Gladiator fairly recently, and it is a solid film. Like it works.
When I was 12 or whenever 300 came out, it was the coolest film.
Oh god, yeah.
It was the coolest film.
Oh my god, yeah.
You could
had
watch
a great trailer.
The visual aesthetic. Oh god, this is so cool.
Dark and grungy.
You got like a Fassbender, but we didn't know he was Fassbender in there, and just like all the concepts. I thought there's nothing cooler.
Yeah.
And then you watch it later as a grown up, and you're like, it's a little bit.
It's a bit like, it's a bit trashy. A bit
But Gladiator 2, sure. It's been 25 years.
I also think that, as we said, look, Ridley Scott, a little bit hit and miss at the moment. Yeah. If it sticks to the epic, if the epic parts of Gladiator 2 are as good as the epic parts of Napoleon, that's great. It's the human drama that I worry about with these films. I need the script and the human element to be good because Ridley Scott, as I said in our Napoleon review, has such impatience and such works at such a speed that it really diminishes the kind of emotional landing
point. He's only able to have the output he currently has by going from Napoleon into Gladiator 2 by probably working so quickly.
I think with Gladiator 2, I think I'm also interested to see Paul Mescal break out of sad, tortured man, you know, sad boy, into...
Be a brute
in a proper epic. Yeah. Let's see you in some sunshine. Let's see you wrestle a tiger with your bare hands, Paul.
And we'll love it. Oh, sand all over it.
Please.
Bevan, remain calm.
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
So that's Gladiator 2. And then last of all, a film I think we're both interested to see, which is slated for December 25th, which seems bizarre because this is not a Christmas movie. Robert Eggers, who made The Witch, and
The Lighthouse
and The Northman, returns with a remake of Nosferatu, the 1920s silent, Dracula vampire-inspired film, which if you have seen any clips of online, is still very creepy.
Horrifying.
Still chilling. And this sort of depiction of this bald, pointy, toothy, vampiric figure. And he's directing a new adaptation of that. That was 1922, the original film. That's a
masterpiece for 1922.
Absolutely.
Like, come on. And just
in the history of cinema, Nosferatu is held up as
if you haven't seen it, I kind of almost would say you actually have. Go and just YouTube some of the scenes. It's been referenced in other films and TV for years. Like Family Guy have referenced it.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. Go and just look at some of the scenes creeping up towards the bedroom while you wait.
Yeah.
The sort of deeply gothic noir descendants into... Yeah. Transylvania, hell, whatever it is. It's really, really horrifying.
Bill Skarsgård, he of horror fame, we love Bill Skarsgård, is playing the infamous vampire.
He's equal.
And then Lily Rose Depp is the object of his infatuation, but also Willem Dafoe is in it as a sort of vampire hunter figure.
Perfect.
Willem Dafoe. What a great guy.
He'd be a good sort of Van Helsing for anyone, wouldn't he?
I did see, when I saw him at the Poor Things premiere, I did think, you have... just the most interesting face.
Yeah.
You do. I want to grab it and be like...
like a puppy. You know, puppies are all the fur they're ever going to have in life. And they, like, if they sit forward too much, it like rolls over.
Yeah. All right. Wow, that face is elastic.
Yeah.
So
he does lots of interesting work.
That's a really interesting mix.
One of my favourite roles is in the Mr. Bean's Holiday.
He's in that, Willem Dafoe.
Yeah,
really?
Willem Dafoe. He plays a writer, director, actor who stars, directs, writes his own films. Huh. It's very funny.
James, of the 10 films we've mentioned there, if you had to pick one, what are you most excited for?
I'm going to pick... I really like Nosferatu, Challengers. Dune, I'm excited for, but when it's ready, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I'm almost like...
It's almost like a foregone conclusion, but we know it's going to be
good. If it came out next week, great. If it came out in November, fine.
Okay.
It's foregone.
I'm gonna jump in. I'm going to say, actually, Furiosa.
Yeah, okay.
For the point that I'm like, okay... Everyone's telling me that this is the previous one was a masterpiece. Mm. It's been 9 years. That's quite a lot of time.
Yeah.
Let's see what else you got. Let's see if this is going to be a new film or is it going to be a rehash of the original? Because we've not seen anything like this since Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
So give it to me.
Love more budget, more fun. Yeah. It is refreshing to not have to, the last two times we've done this, point at three Marvel films and be like, the Marvels?
Yes.
I guess they're doing that at least. We rest the characters. They can scrabble and write the whole new thing and just rest it. Let people want it again. Back to Black could be good.
But there are loads of other films coming out as well, but we haven't got time to mention them all. But email us in to hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com and let us know what films you're excited for and what films we should be looking out for.
There are films we've missed. Anything we've missed.
Totally.
And as always, there are films we don't even know about that are going to come out we're going to fall in love with.
And there's loads of films that we saw last year that are kind of in this kind of award season cycle. Yep. So let us know what films you're excited for.
George, it's 2024, time to read the first batch of emails from the Sirens. As always, guys, if you wanted to send an email to the show, you can do by emailing it to hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com.
And I will just say, when we did the Pub Kitchen Awards, we put a shout out for everyone's thoughts about 2023 in review. We had a great response from people telling us all what their favorite films were from last year. And we tried to read out as many as we could. We couldn't read out them all. Some came in after we already recorded it. We saw them, we read them, but it is 2024 now. So we won't be reading those through anymore. We will be moving on with our eyes set to the future, to this new year.
Speaking of reading, Harry writes into the show and says to hello at popkitchenpodcast.com. And he says, subject line, George, colon, favorite films you studied and worst films you studied. Hiya, George and James. Huzzah, you remember me. After going back and listening to many episodes again, like I need an excuse, I couldn't for the life of me find my first question.
Yes, so Harry was the one who emailed in and said that we hadn't read his first email about being heartbroken when he went to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, even though I remember us doing it, but he can't seem to find it. I don't know, maybe it disappeared, but anyway.
He says, sorry, George, I have failed you. Insert Michael Caine crying in The Dark Knight Rises. Nevertheless, it feels great. You remembered. My new email brings around a question more catered to George. Apologies, James. As a fellow film studies graduate, what was your favourite module you remember? Also, what was the best film you were introduced to during your studies? For me, I was introduced in my first year to City of God, and OMG, what a revelation. I loved coming out of that lecture and finding out this is not an underrated film, but rather one of the highest rated foreign films in Western culture. The worst part of my studies was definitely B-movies. Contemporary film fans would think these are the types of films that are aware that they are trash. However, this module actually dives into the origins of the phrase, like, between 1920s and 1950s. Attack of the 50-Foot Woman was definitely the worst of the bunch. Don't get me started. Right. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Big up the sirens from Top 1% Club. Nice. Harry, sent from that shitty BlackBerry flip phone everyone had as their first phone.
Harry, great question about that. So yes, I studied film at university, and in terms of the first of all, your question was best module. So the best module, in hindsight, was actually the hardest one. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I really did afterwards, which was the module on film theory, which sounds heavy and dense.
I remember
and
you
stuff.
Saying, yeah,
but like it was also the way that they expect us to respond to it. So every week we would look at film, approaching it from a different theoretical standpoint. So film in regard to race, film in regard to feminism, in regards to colonialism, and the male gaze, like looking at Laura Mulvey, and each week we were required to apply a very deep, like hard critical framework in response to it. We had to do like a mini essay each time, and it was really tough. And the films that we watched, were esoteric, dry, really studying it on a kind of like molecular level, but. It's been such a long time since I spoke about that module. I can't actually remember all the details. But what I do remember is despite it being hard and not enjoyable at the time, after we finished that module, everyone on the course, we all agreed that it fundamentally changed the way we looked at films, and we felt much more enriched for it, and we learned the most. And so that was a really great experience, actually. So it was the hardest one, but most enjoyable. In terms of the films that I enjoyed the most from my studies, I actually went back and through my lists of old films I've seen.
I was going to say, it's probably quite important to do that to people when they go to approach film studies, to sort of deconstruct your own sense of the structure of film and actually start force you to actually watch them in a very different way and analyze them in a very different way.
It was really looking at like film as a mechanism for ideologies. That was it. It was approaching different how film and its apparatus promotes a specific ideology. It was really
never how you've watched films until that point.
It's like a really deep, like if anyone knows their films of like Bela Balazs and like Jean-Luc Baudry, it's like real.
I'll say this for you naturally.
Anyway. But in terms of the films I watched in my modules that I most enjoyed, so in my first year, we just studied, kitchen sink dramas, British kitchen sink dramas. And there's a really great one called Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, starring Albert Finney. And there's a line in it that the Artie Monkey's first album or whatever it's called, Whatever People Say I Am, that's what I'm not. That's from that movie, it came out in 1960. It was part of the British Young Angry Men sort of genre, which is like you take a working class city with a working class protagonist and have them engage in a kind of social debate in the way of the film. So this one's kind of about like what it's like to be working, and there are other ones that talk about like having an affair, having a premature baby, and there's always a bit in these films where the main protagonist will walk up to a vantage point and look out at their town and be like, well, I'm fucking sick of it here. I'm going to go. But anyway, the film, though, is really funny, really slick. Albert Finney's great in it. And it's just a really good film from that era. Like when you go back and watch a film from 1960, you're like, oh, yeah, films were awesome back then. They really did still make good films.
Do you... We have lots of young listeners,
I have more,
George.
But go on.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you continue.
Well, I will continue. My other... this is like my go-to old film when people say to me, I don't watch old films. Brief Encounter. We studied British cinema. That was a separate module. We actually studied British cinema in depth. And we looked at Brief Encounter, which was made in 1945. David Lean directed, Noel Coward written. The way it depicted relationships, but also a woman's feeling and an expression of a woman's role in that era. Brief Encounter is only 90 minutes long. It's a really timeless, romantic film, and it is. I rewatched it again a couple of years ago. It's really good. Like, it's really good. It has all the kind of emotional things you'd expect for something like From Past Lives or the Before films. It's a really good film. And people are like, oh, I don't watch older films. I'm like, it's only 90 minutes long and it was made in 1945 and it's iconic. It's an iconic film. Anyone would have recognized the image of Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard on the on the train platform with the steam coming out. And my other ones were, I've not seen many Bollywood films, James, but one we saw was called Kal Ho Na Ho, and it's a 3-hour long musical epic like most Bollywood films. And we sat in this lecture hall at uni and we watched it and I had a blast. It was so much fun. There's two songs from it I still have on my playlist, which is great. And just so much fun. They do a cover of Pretty Woman in it and it's just fantastic. And there's other one more British film as well called Went the Day Well, which is from the 1940s. And it's about a British village besieged by... spies, basically Nazi spies who reveal themselves, a bit like when the eagle has landed, and the villagers have to like defend themselves, and it obviously like it's kind of in an old-fashioned way, but there's a really good bit where there's this woman who's got a German officer in her house. And like he demands food, so she like gets him like a sausage, and then he demands some pepper, so she gets some pepper and throws it in his face. He's like, she gets an axe and kills him with it. And like obviously it's done like all off camera, but for the 1940s, I was like, that's quite a badass way to dispatch a Nazi officer. Those are the films. James,
I remember I did a module in like American studies. We did a film one. It was Brokeback Mountain was one, which was great. And then obviously we had watched Footlight Parade from 1933, which was brilliant. Yeah. With James Cagney, where you've got the last, I want to say 30, 40 minutes of that film is the most epic dance sequence with like 500 dancers on stage. You know, when it's just a huge stair stage, and then you've got all the water dancers of the women, like all of that like flowery evolving stuff. Yeah. Go on YouTube and check out the clips from that, and you'll see that they've been quoted and memed in like a million different ways. And that was genuinely brilliant. And the whole film is about like don't quote me on this, like a dance producer, choreographer trying to facilitate Hollywood to film a massive dark sequence.
Right.
So it's a little bit like this guy's a little bit of a chanter and he's going, why? Who you got on the phone? Talk to me now. And then it all involves in this like amazing looking for a Shanghai.
Right. Oh,
that's brilliant. Do you we have lots of young listeners who love film. Do you recommend film studies as a uni degree? Because people will be interested in film, they listen. Young people will be thinking, especially questioning the value of university. And not to take away from film studies, but I think some people might go, it's not one of the staple subjects you do at school. Is it worth veering off from a very staple subject into film studies? Do you recommend it? And obviously, you've not been at uni for a long time.
Are you saying it's not a traditional subject in the way that English or history is?
It's an unknown. So for students and parents, it's not like history, English, science.
I think, if anything, it's justified itself more and more over the past 10 years
with the
advent of more social media and new media and the increasing role of the moving image in our lives. I will say that if you were looking for a practical, at least this is from my experience at Sussex, if you were looking for a practical engagement with filmmaking or media of that kind, you are you're best to be doing something like media studies or media.
I know a lot of people who did media studies. As someone who works in media, I would not do media studies.
Okay.
Waste of time. Okay. You can learn media studies in half an hour.
Okay, let me take that back a second. Yeah. Forget media
studies. I just want to clarify my media studies thing. I don't think it's a bad degree. I think having worked in media...
Some of our listeners would have taken it.
Some of our listeners, I'm sure, are doing media studies. I think media studies is a very long and very expensive way to learn a lot of stuff you'll learn very quickly on the job.
Okay. That's what I want to say. Interesting. Back to what I mean about film studies is that if you're looking for like a practical engagement in filmmaking, you either need to probably just go and do it, as they say, or take a filmmaking course, which is different. What film is going to do for you is a much more academic approach and, you know, looking into, like I said, with my, that module, the theoretical, ideological stuff behind it, which isn't for everyone, but if you do find that interesting and you're prepared to stick with it...
You already love film.
You're actually equipping yourself with a whole framework and apparatus with which to view the moving image for the rest of your life. Mm. So then when you see stuff, like, on whether it be on TikTok or at the cinema, you understand what the visual image can do in a different way. And I benefited from a lot of that. Mm. No, I didn't leap into a career in film out of it. Mm. But that's a wider debate about what you ascribe the true value of a university experience is. I mean, this is a whole deep debate.
Yeah.
But I would say if you're going to do film studies, like, you will get... The value of it is in just, like, ultimately rewiring your brain to re-see how the visual image
totally
works.
I think I would say now that we're 10 years on from the uni application process, or like first year, I would say, based on my experience and friends of mine who've all left their university and gone traveling and left their first jobs, nine times out of 10 people have moved around. I would say follow the interest and follow what you really love. And chances are, if you're listening to this, you really love film. Yeah. I don't think you'd regret film studies.
Also,
degree.
I did English and film because I got into doing English, course, and I changed to English and film. And you know what? In hindsight, I'd rather just do film because ultimately it's where the interest lies, as you said. Mm. And when you're trying to write a 6,000-word dissertation at 10 o'clock at night in the library, it's the interest that's going to get you through and make it easier. And I ended up bending my entire English degree to fit my film degree. And I used to use my English degree to always write about film adaptations and things like that. And to the point where my English dissertation was only about films. I don't know how I swung that, but it was fucking great. So go with your gut at the end of the day, because it's, if you're going to do something for 3 years and you spend a lot of money on it, it'll be more worthwhile.
My housemates in uni, I think four of them did media studies. And when I say that, like, their assessed work was like cutting and sticking on a poster and handing that in.
Wow.
And I was like, that looks like something that a year nine pre-GCSE homework assignment would be. And I was a little bit like, you're doing this media studies, like, where are all the skills in media? And like, what I was doing, I had to like do statistics, I did psychology, statistics, analyzing studies, doing like cross study references, like weird math stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I could have been doing that, which would have been way easier. But I obviously didn't do any media while I was at uni. I was interested in media, but I left and started working as a runner, and I learned faster and better all of the skills that they would have learned in a media studies degree. So I would just check. It's a very long and expensive way to do that. And if you're cutting and sticking on a poster,
so basically,
as a uni course.
Nothing wrong with doing media studies, but make sure you're getting value out of it.
Yeah.
Make sure you're really getting a lot of value out of it.
Absolutely. Especially now it's very expensive and time consuming. This next one is from James.
Yeah, well, I think I'll read it.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
This next email is from James, who just says, "Hi fellas, big fan of your poddy and surprisingly a big fan of, drumroll please, .. films. Yes, magnificent, brilliant, and of course occasionally gorgeously sexy films are the one true art form. Anyway, to get to the point, I think it's time we accept the crown, decided to make Charles more redeemable because he's king now. Adios, boys. Mm. I'll have my golden nugget opinions for you soon. Cheers, Jambo." James, were you... What time of... Yeah, you sent that 10 past 10 in the evening. I think you'd had a bit of port or something by that, your Christmas merriment. We're going to be talking about The Crown in our bonus episode this week, so we'll just move that discussion
well,
to that.
No? Yeah, I will say, for broad strokes, The Crown has always been an equal amounts of critical and celebratory of the monarchy.
I think there's multiple...
It dishes it out in lots of different ways.
It's attempting to be a three-dimensional characterization of those people. So I think... That is our answer, James.
This next one's from Corey, who says, subject line, chocolate. "Hey guys, I hope you're well. In episode 106, you talked for a while about chocolate."
We did.
"Have you ever tried chocolate in coffee? Not a ton, just a tiny piece. You can get cacao nibs that are less processed. Might sound weird, but give it a shot. Best, Corey." Yes, Corey, I have. I like to pour the, like you see on TikTok, like espresso over a block of chocolate. It's lovely. It's very, very nice.
Just like dunk a Twix in and suck it through that.
No. Just like fresh Nespresso being poured over good chocolate. It's a little bit indulgent and strange, but maybe
This did kick off a big conversation because Michael, friend of the show, wrote in and about chocolate, said, all right. Michael again from a damp, dreary Glasgow. Glad you enjoyed your time up here, James. I'll get to my thoughts on Wonka in a second, but I had to get weighed into this chocolate in the fridge debate first. And I'm sorry, but for such a reasonable man whose opinions I so often find myself nodding along to, I simply cannot get behind George's abhorrent opinion of fridge chocolate.
He's awful.
How dare you? Saying it tastes better from the fridge is objectively wrong. It actively tastes worse. It tastes weaker. It's not as smooth. You nearly lose a tooth with every bite. Even Hotel Chocolat, one of the fanciest of fancy chocolate makers, says chocolate kept in the fridge is worse, that it adversely affects texture, and that keeping it in the fridge prevents it from releasing all of its flavor. And here is a link to show that my pedantry has no bounds. And sure enough, yes, Michael has included a link from Hotel Chocolat about why you shouldn't put your chocolate in the fridge. Cool. I disagree. I've had it. I'm not saying, for the record, that chocolate tastes bad out of the fridge. I'm not saying I won't touch chocolate if it's not been in the fridge. But every time I eat it, I often go, if that had been in the fridge, you'd lose that sort of acidic clagginess at the back of your throat. And
you're quite fundamentalist about it.
In what respect?
You were like, it was, came across like you wouldn't leave chocolate out of the fridge.
You're tolerant
of it.
But you know what it is? I will eat chocolate out of the fridge, but I will never eat as much as I would have done if it'd been in the fridge. Because it's just not got that refreshingness to it, I think. It's a personal thing.
We should do a taste.
Someone did comment on the YouTube and say, you do need to try them side by side.
I'll get some defenders.
Can I say?
Yeah, that's fine. What if I were to do that? Bar of dairy milk?
I think you've got to go plain, keep it, to get the objectives. I think a bar of dairy milk in the...
Buttons, because they're very...
The minstrels, I think, is a really key one.
We could do buttons and minstrels, because buttons are very good because they rest on the tongue and they melt.
I think that's... But maybe it's because I like a bit more of a crunch. I'm a biscuit man, really, at heart, James.
I love biscuit too.
Also, Michael shares his thoughts on Wonka, which I'm sure...
Speaking of chocolate.
A lot of people would have used their Christmas break to go and see. And Michael says, I found myself broadly agreeing with your guys' opinion. I thought it was all right, but I'm a bit blown away by the sheer number of 5-star reviews it got from many critics. For me, it didn't come anywhere near to the heights of the Paddington films, as it's not consistently funny, sometimes tipping over into being a bit cringy. Yeah, I see that. And nor is it consistently moving or heartfelt. I think Chalamet copes surprisingly well with it being an all-singing and all-dancing musical, although his mother was on Broadway, so shouldn't that be all that surprising? I didn't know that. I didn't know his mother was an actor. But for me, Gene Wilder will always be Wonka. I don't think Chalamet's take not being as embittered or cynical as Wilder's is an issue, as Wilder's is older and more worn down than the character. More worn down by the greed he's been privy to in his career, and Chalamet's is still a fresh-faced newcomer in this iteration. But... like the two of you said, Chalamet's take definitely missed the sardonicism, mischievousness, and the off-the-wall elements that Wilder brought to the character. I don't think the songs are particularly memorable. I agree. I don't think they are. And found the little nods to the original 70s soundtrack to be a bit of a misstep. I obviously understand why they did it, but for me it only served to remind me of how great the songs from the original are and how none of the new ones come close to the likes of The Candyman or Pure Imagination, although I appreciate it might be unfair to expect them to reach those heights. Ultimately, if we're going for a confectionery comparison, I'd say it's the cinematic candy floss. Bright, sweet, easily consumed, but not much substance to it outside of that. Michael, that is very spot on, I think, actually. That's a good little anecdote you've given us there.
Roald Dahl, it really
analogy,
does.
Analogy, rather.
Yes. The whole, you do think about Roald Dahl, and we made this point in review. It is weird and sinister and dark, and there are really, harsh consequences.
But enjoyably dark. Yes. Deliciously weird.
He's the illustrator, Quentin Blake. That sort of style of, kooky, weird, big nose, the witches, the twits.
Big nose, not the way Roald Dahl would describe it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was too soft around the edges, too mushy. That was my thing coming out of it. It's a mushy marshmallow. Yeah.
It's a marshmallow. It's
a marshmallow. The big ones, the big marshmallows.
Yeah, it's not a nice bite of chocolate in or out of the fridge.
You want a bit more fridge with your Wonka chocolate.
That concludes our emails for this week.
It's time to play a game.
Let's please do it.
George, it's 2024. As always, Pulp Kitchen ends...
With a game.
George, we are back with a game that we picked up on at the end of the year, which was a faster, version of the name 6 in 30. It's a name 3 in 6 seconds, but there's multiple per round.
Drums.
They kind of get a little bit harder towards the end, where I'm thinking, they're all easy, but in 6 seconds, I have to be a bit easier.
You really put my brain through it.
Yeah.
Steam coming out of my ears.
Yeah. Yes. All right, George, are you ready? You have to name 3 of these in 6 seconds. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Name 3 Batman villains.
Joker, Penguin, and Catwoman.
Yeah, yes. Name 3 films with one word in the title.
Once. Wally. Up.
I'm going to say it's a fail.
Once and up.
Name 3 film composers.
Howard Shaw, John Williams, and Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Name three films that came out in the 90s.
Matrix, Truman Show, and Ace Ventura.
Name three non-MCU Chris Evans films.
Push, The Fantastic Four, and Gifted.
Yes. Name three films where the main character dies.
Spoilers. Sunset Boulevard. Main character.
Time.
The Matrix.
Matrix.
Four, three.
Gladiator.
Yeah, we've had that question before on this show.
Troy.
I think we shouldn't ask it because it does give away films.
I think you're fine.
I don't know.
Oh,
you
please.
Said earlier we have young listeners. I don't want to ruin
it. To know that Russell Crowe dies at the end of Gladiator, that also doesn't ruin the movie for you.
It's a shame to know it, though.
I think it's fine.
All right.
You failed most of those, I'd say.
Well, they're hard. That's why they're hard.
They were also things that we've played in 30 seconds, like the films with one word in the title.
I thought so, yeah.
Catwoman is a bit of a stretch for a
villain.
I know. Two-Faced Joker Bane.
Oh, Bane, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Nerd.
You're so dumb. All right, George, you ready for your second round?
Sure.
Of name three in six. George, you have to name three of these films in 6 seconds. Are you ready?
Yes.
Three, two, one. Name three films set in World War II.
Saving Private Ryan, Saving Private Ryan, and Fury, and Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes. Name three Sam Mendes films.
Revolutionary Road, American Beauty, and Empire of Light.
Yes. Name three actual titles of Fast and Furious films.
The Fate of the Furious, yes. Too Fast, Too Furious, yes. And Fast X.
Yes. Name three Gary Oldman films.
Darkest Hour, Leon, and Oppenheimer.
Name three films starring Brendan Fraser, not supporting.
The Mummy, and The Whale, and another George of the Jungle.
Yes. Name three R/18 rated comedies.
Oh, The Hangover.
Yeah.
Old School.
I could give it.
And
Big One.
Deadpool!
There you go. Breathe. It's over. You made it. Sam Mendes nearly got you there.
Well, it didn't.
Spectre Skyfall could have saved you.
Yeah, but I went for his non-Bond stuff. Do you know what? What's a good Sam Mendes film?
Revolutionary Road.
Yeah,
American
but
Beauty.
Other than that, is American Beauty good?
Skyfall.
Is American Beauty good? Is it actually good?
I've not seen it in over 5 years, but...
I've only seen that
it's
once. I don't know if that's a good film anymore.
I liked it when I watched
it. We talked about this recently, didn't we, about the guy filming the plastic bag and how that's not really interesting anymore. Did we talk about it? Or did we?
I think so, yeah.
Was it you? Was it the other podcast I do?
The Reservoir Hot Dogs.
Yeah. That's it, by the way. We never talked about this on the show, but James and I have a running joke about Phantom spin-off Pop Kitchen.
The other gangs.
You know, like how like there's the Wario to Mario.
Yeah.
And there's the like the bizarro world or the parallel universes where it's not called Pop Kitchen, but it's another Tarantino food pun podcast.
So the Inglourious Blanches.
The Inglourious Blanches, the Reservoir Hot Dogs, the Kill Grills.
The Kill Grills.
The Death Proof.
Death Proving. Like yeah, Death Proving of bread.
The Once Upon a Time in Paul Hollywood.
Yeah.
And we didn't have anything for Django, did we? The Jackie Brown bread.
Jackie Brown bread. Jando ungrained.
Ungrained, maybe?
Unleavened.
Mango. Mango Unchained.
Mango Unchained.
There you go. Yeah. Mango Unchained.
Mango Unchained. All options, guys.
All options.
All options.
Anyway, okay. Any more games for me? Or is that
That is all, George.
Thank you.
That's all for our first episode of the year. That is episode 108. No, 109.
Who knows anymore?
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pop Kitchen. I look forward to spending the rest of the year with all of you.
Thank you for joining us in this new year. I hope you've had a great start to the year.
I look forward to seeing all of those films.
We're going to have loads of great films to watch this year. And we're going to see films this year that we haven't even mentioned in that list that we're going to love. And by the end of the year, we'll be going, wow, I loved that film.
Like and subscribe for all of it, please.
And bonus episode this week coming out, Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, Maestro, and our thoughts on The Crown, all of it. Check it out. And as ever, guys, just please continue to like and subscribe and follow and share anything you do on Instagram and TikTok. We put a lot of stuff out there, clips on the show, but also like highlights of us going to exciting experiences, screenings, premieres, shout outs and questions on to the audience. So continue to stay in touch on there.
And just quickly, if you wanted to know, okay, 2024 is cool. What about 2023? Going back and check out the Pulp Kitchen Awards. We reviewed 2023. We gave our awards for best film, best performance, best scene, best actors, all of it. If you haven't listened to that episode, it was great. We wore black tie.
Yes.
Go and check that out.
See you next week.
New episodes every Wednesday. I didn't say that.